let me welcome Allison Parker from left to right as you look at your stereo radio screens. Allison Parker of Radical Root Farm. Sherry Doyle of Angelic Organics Learning Center, Farmer Training Initiative. And Chris Pershall of Trogs Hollow CSA. Have I got that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. That's all the time we have. Good night, everybody. It's great to have you guys here. Thank you all for coming down. The reason they're here is because we're at that time of year. It's interesting as we get into the harvest season here in the upper Midwest. I guess it's also farmer training season, isn't it, Sherry?
Yes, definitely. We start our State Line Farm Beginnings course in October each year, and that runs through March and the classroom portion. And that works really well because then the participants can launch into their mentorships and their growing season learning plan from March through September.
So the idea is you get them in the classroom, you stick them in the classroom for a few months, and then the weather warms up, and all right, now we throw you out in the field, and you got to get going.
Exactly. Hopefully they're really inspired after spending all that time indoors.
I would think so. They're champing at the bit and growing roots in the bottom of their shoes because they need to get outside.
Right.
But that does make sense because if you're going to teach people about this, put them right to work. And Chris, you're nodding because you went through the Farm Beginnings program.
Yeah, that was 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Three years ago, we went through that, my wife and I. And we had already started our farm at that point, but it was a good thing just to get us that kick in the butt that we needed. And like you said, in the spring, get us out the door and expand and keep going.
Well, I got to ask you, at the beginning of the show, I read some statistics about farmers. I don't know if you heard that on the way in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of depressing, actually,
yeah,
that the average age of the farmer is 57 years old.
Yep.
And that there are three times as many farmers over 65 as there are under 35. Now, mm-hmm, Chris, you're under 35.
No, 38, but close
38.
Enough.
Oh, you don't qualify. Allison?
I'm 33.
Hey, you make it. Oh, my goodness. Oh, thank God we got somebody young in here. Oh, like, you're 38. You know, you're over there.
I started under 35, though.
Okay, good.
So I fit that way.
That's a really good point. And that's my question, and it's addressed to you, both you, Chris, and Allison. Chris, we'll start with you. What in the world makes someone decide to be a farmer in the 21st century?
Oh, my great-grandmother did. I grew up in her gardens in Chicago here, sitting there picking things off the plants, eating them right there. And even though I went to school, university, and I was working a different job, I could just never get away from it. I think the big thing that pushed me over is that my wife and I moved to Glasgow, Scotland for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no fresh produce. And so we tried to grow, not for the first time, but we tried to grow in Glasgow, which is really far north. Not cold, but not enough sun. And when we moved home, it was every year our garden just kept getting bigger because we didn't ever want to be at a point where we didn't have our own fresh produce anymore. And that's where we kind of went when we had too much to give away. We started selling it. And I was able to.
And where were you living when you came back?
Oh, Elgin, just outside of the city here.
And how much property did you have there?
We started on an eighth of an acre. In our
was
backyard.
That just your backyard?
Just our backyard in the city of Elgin. And that's where we started selling from. We were seven blocks off the river in the city, not out, you know, out in a big field somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But we started out in our backyard. And, that's right after that first year, we started in State Line and were able to make contacts and then expand a little more with some rental land.
So, and I'll get to you in a second, Allison, about that. But let's get back to State Line for a second, because
yeah,
we're gonna mention a number of different initiatives here today, and they all do slightly different things. In fact, we'll get to Mike in a second. But how did you learn about State Line Farm Beginnings, and what made you think this was a program for you?
Well, That's a good question. We had.
It's actually a pretty simple question. I mean, that's the softball question here.
I think it was basically we had done some programs at the Learning Center already, and we were looking to get a little more experience and get some teaching on. Basically, is this a good idea, and are we going to be able to do this for a living? And so, in fact, the first year before we started the business, we applied, and there were too many applicants. And so we started the business anyway and started selling. And then the next year we got in the middle of our first season. And it was, how did we find out? By going to Angelic Learning Center to do other things and just continuing from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did a big, made a big effort to go and talk to other farmers anywhere in the Chicagoland area that were doing small vegetable farms to ask them about the program as well. So that helped push us there. But that it was basically stumbling onto the program through doing other events at the Learning Center.
All right. And Sherry, tell me what happens when farmers get into State Line Farm Beginnings.
Well, one of the strengths of our program is that it is farmer-led. And so what they get access to right away are a series of people that have gone before them that have had varying levels of success and can tell their story very specifically. Like they can share their cash flow statements and explain how they built that. They can share how they financed that first year.
You're really laying it all out there then. I mean, that's a lot of transparency to lay out your cash statements and say, this is how I'm doing it. Because you open yourself up to constructive criticism, but it is criticism, possibly.
Sure. It's true. And it's actually one of the reasons I love facilitating the class is because I'm constantly impressed with people's generosity, with how the farmers come in and talk about the mistakes they've made so that the new farmers don't necessarily have to make those same mistakes. And they talk about how they very creatively chose their product mix, chose their market channels. And so that's really the strength of the program. And that's what the people get when they first come in, because each session, it meets roughly every other Saturday throughout the course of the winter. And each session features at least one experienced farmer, if not up to three or four, talking about how they've done it.
Okay, now the question is for you, Chris. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get in the first season. You went ahead with the business anyway. You got in the next year.
Right.
And when you got into State Line Farm Beginnings after already being up and running, what made you go, holy cow, I wish I had been here a year earlier?
You know, it was, like Sherry said, opening up the financial statements and pushing the business plan aspect of the class. I'd been growing my whole life. You know, like I said earlier, I was in my great-grandmother's garden. But actually having to put that business plan together, or at least model one together, and seeing Alex and Allison come in and talk, and talking with them about how they were able to do this and, you know, what are we looking at as far as expenses and what should we plant and how much? Because it's that expansion, those first few years, getting your feet in the ground and that expansion and knowing, you know, how much are we going to need to have money-wise and how are we going to get this land together? That's something that I don't know if we missed that the first year of the business, but that was the essential part for us, is that business aspect of these are the books, this is what everybody's doing. Everybody's doing it different, and we've all made mistakes, and here, we'll help you.
Mm-hmm.
That was the big thing.
We have in the studio, that's Chris Pershall of Trogs Hollow CSA. Where does the name Trogs Hollow come from?
A friend in college gave our band that name, and it didn't stick with the band, but it stuck with me. And then when we started doing this, Marcy said, let's use that name. It's a good farm name.
I like it. It's a great name. Sherry Doyle from Angelic Organics Learning Center is here, and Allison Parker of another name I like, Radical Root Farm. And let's go to you. And as we go to you, I want to bring in Mike Sands, who's the founding executive director at the Liberty Prairie Foundation, currently senior associate. Mike, good morning.
Good morning.
And the reason I'm bringing you in is because, unlike Chris and his wife Marcy, Allison and her husband Alex went a slightly different route. They didn't take the State Line Farm Beginnings program. Instead, they worked with the Prairie Crossing Farm and the Farm Business Development Center at Prairie Crossing Farm. Allison, I'm going to talk to you first. How was that experience with you? And then perhaps we can talk about how these two programs complement each other.
Sure.
Let me ask you, first of all, why did you want to get into farming? You're under the magical 35-year-old limit, okay?
My husband and I, we were sort of working different jobs. He was working in a restaurant, and I was doing a program called the Environmental Corps. And we got sort of really interested just in food issues and access to food issues, and on top of that, I was doing a lot of environmental work and seeing huge issues with just the practice of organic farming and the lack of, especially in this area. We were really interested in the Midwest and near Chicago. And I was also doing a lot of writing at that time. I was doing some freelance work with various food issues, and we just got really interested in it and decided, well, let's work on some farms and see how we like it. And so we did several internships.
Where did you intern?
We interned in Texas.
Why Texas?
Well, my family's originally from Texas, so okay. We were actually there for a little while. And then Wisconsin. Yeah, after that, we just kind of decided, well, let's see if we could do this as a business and as a job and have a CSA of our own. And so we tried it. And thanks to the Farm Business Development Center at Prairie Crossing, it was pretty pivotal that that was where we landed, just because neither Alex or I come from farming backgrounds. We had no, access to land anywhere. So
here we have the opposites. We have a person who had a background, grown his whole life, and you had none of that.
Right, right. Yeah.
And how much of an obstacle did that prove to be?
If it hadn't been for Prairie Crossing and the access that provided us, I don't see how we could have done it, because that allowed us to rent the land, rent all the infrastructure and the equipment, for which we have none of. And also we didn't have really anyone. Our families both were like, well, what are you guys doing? Or, they didn't really understand what we wanted to do. And
I have to admit, I might have the same kinds of questions.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's like, excuse me, what are you doing? Did you get that at a few Thanksgiving dinners?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, people really, our families really just did not understand. And now, like, my parents are part of our CSA program, and they're our biggest supporters, but it took years for them
and that's all you have to say is, Mom, Dad, don't worry about it, you're going to get fresh vegetables weekend.
Right? It's an education process for sure.
Let's go to Mike Sands talk about how you can help these young pups who have no experience and no land. I mean, what is it that the Farm Business Development Center does in drawing in these people?
Well, I think, going back to your initial question about the age of farmers increasing over time and kind of, frankly, depressing numbers in the farm sector about the rural population and farm numbers, there is one small bright spot, and that is that the one category in the USDA numbers that are increasing are the small farm numbers and the kind of more entrepreneurial folks that are getting into farming. And it's really a different demographic, and the two, both Chris and Allison and Alex, represent this new demographic. They're typically people who you know, come from, they have some experience potentially growing. They have a relative, maybe a grandmother or a grandfather, but they don't come off of really active working farms. But they're typically very bright, typically very entrepreneurially focused. And what they need is just a little bit of support to get over that hump. And if you look at the history of where these people, how these people have gotten to where they are in most cases, is they have started by working on other farms, either as apprentices or as people just simply working on farms and maybe kind of working up through to the extent where they may even be a farm manager or something. But then they need to take this kind of giant step. And there are two major hurdles that they face at that point. And I think the partnership between the Farm Business Development Center and State Line Farm Beginnings really addresses that. The first, and Sherry already addressed this, and your young farmers have addressed this, is the sitting down and actually getting a plan put together. A lot of us like to go do things, whether it's farming or something else, and we often kind of dive in potentially without much of a plan in terms of putting things down on paper and getting numbers in place and starting to look at options. And the farm business or the State Line Farm Beginnings year-long course really does that. So they come out of that with a business plan, and the depth of that business plan varies, obviously, but they have something. The second major challenge is having access to all of the infrastructure, including land, that farming requires. And those can represent huge capital costs. The premise behind the Farm Business Development Center is an attempt to postpone those capital investments as long as possible and convert them to, in essence, variable costs. So people like Alex and Allison come to the farm, they lease land, they lease tractor time, they lease space in a greenhouse, in a production greenhouse, they lease space in coolers, they have access to the resources they need, but at a scale that they can actually both pay for and handle. If you were in a manufacturing business, you wouldn't expect to buy a 50,000 square foot warehouse and production facility if you were in the first year only going to use 10,000 square feet. But in farming, often you have to if you're going to buy land. So they come in, they work for a couple of years. Our kind of mantra is 5 years, up to 5 years, up to 5 acres. And at that point, they are at a place where they can often move on to a larger, more independent situation.
And right now, Allison, are you on your own land?
Yeah. So what's happened to us is we've gotten an opportunity, thanks to Prairie Crossing and to the Farm Business Development Center and an organization called Conserve Lake County, where we're actually on a historic farm that was saved by Conserve Lake County. Basically, it's a conservation organization. And we have a long-term lease with them now, which makes us have like a pretty stable, you know, pretty permanent place to farm now, which is pretty perfect for us because we are still renting everything because we wouldn't really have been able to afford to buy at this point. But we have the security of the lease where now we know we can, you know, plant our perennials and be much more stable and secure where we are now. So we're really excited.
Now, how is it that you guys work together, Sherry, you and Mike and Angelic Organics Learning Center working with Prairie Crossing?
We have a long history of working together. Most recently, in 2009, we applied for a USDA grant under the Beginning Farmer Rancher Development Program. And there are three partners in that grant, the Prairie Crossing Angelic Organics Learning Center and Michael Fields Agricultural Institute in Wisconsin. And so so we and we're going through two cycles now of that grant, which is sizable and has helped us to collaborate even more closely and to provide services for not just brand new farmers, but farmers through year 10 of startup, which is how the USDA defines a beginning farmer. And so that's sort of the recent glue between our organizations. But previously, it made a lot of sense for the Learning Center and our Farmer Training Initiative that focuses on sort of business planning for farms, and for Prairie Crossing Farm Business Development Center that focuses on land access, to partner together, because like Mike said, two of the biggest challenges for new farmers are land access and capital and financing.
And Mike Sands, I know that I suspect that a number of people, when you mention Prairie Crossing, they're not thinking of your farm business development center. They're thinking of those crazy hippies up in Grays Lake who are
they're well-heeled hippies, though.
Right. Yeah, well-heeled hippies. Yeah, because I can't afford to live there. So, right. But you know, you think of the sustainable community. How big a part is the Farm Business Development Center, and how does that work with your community there?
It's part of a large, as you point out, the part of a larger picture. In the original design of Prairie Crossing as a conservation community, from the very beginning, we envisioned the importance of local food production and organic farming in that context. The Farm Business Development Center is not a program of the Homeowners Association, or have any direct connection to that other than proximity. But it does add to the sense of sustainability in the larger community, in that we're actually not only producing food, but producing new farmers. And the community is a market for those farmers. I mean, many of the beginning farmers, I know Alex and Allison, as well as some of the other farmers, have members in their CSAs or sell at markets that are frequented by Prairie Crossing residents.
In the studio, we have Chris Purcell of Trogs Hollow Farm, Allison Parker of Radical Root Farm, Sherry Doyle of Angelic Organics Learning Center on the phone, Mike Sands with the Liberty Prairie Foundation, Prairie Crossing. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. I need to take a short break. I've got some interesting things I want to throw at you about growing. Got a real nice tweet from Rob Carthol, and something you guys might want to think about. He says, farmers may be getting older. Do you suppose that the younger generation is more heavily biased toward organics, which I think is a pretty good question. And I was noticing here earlier on Twitter, Radical Root Farm followed me. Mm-hmm. It's about time.
Good job, Allison.
What is it? Really? She's got her peeps out there. Is somebody tweeting right out there in the green room?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, is that you?
No.
No, you're not doing it. But
My husband's at market. He might be doing it.
Oh, so he's not even here.
Yeah. So
he's got work to do. I think this is the perfect song for you guys right now, because it's, of course, called No Rain. And that's kind of something you guys have been dealing with right now. So tell me, as a new... let me reintroduce my guests here. I have Allison Parker of Radical Root Farm and Chris Parshall of Trogs Hollow CSA. Sherry Doyle from Angelic Organics Learning Center is here, and Mike Sands is on the phone from the Liberty Prairie Foundation. And let's start with you, Alice, and what's been like the last couple of months trying to deal with the weather and the lack of rain?
Yeah, I think lack of rain always stresses out a farmer.
Well, okay, and I got to add, you know, when you think of farms, and I think we think of the mega farms, you just pull out your big long rain or your irrigation system and you just turn that sucker on, right? Have you got anything like that?
We are lucky at Prairie Crossing to have an irrigation well, which not all farmers do, mm-hmm. but we do have access to that. The incubator farmers do. So especially last year, that was extremely helpful. It's always when things get really dry out there, then that's when we start to irrigate using that.
And how do you irrigate? What is it? What's the method?
We have pipe irrigation. So mm-hmm. That's basically just long pipes that you lay on the ground and it sprays water. So we'll rotate them to
and
different areas.
And you're pumping it out of the well.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So.
And Chris, what about you? How have you been dealing with this?
Well, last year was our first year that we ever had to irrigate.
You picked a good year to start farming, didn't you? Or the last couple of years.
Yeah, flooding one year and then the dryness. Last year, that was our big expense. We went out and got a drip irrigation system for one of our fields. And that's the same idea where we run pipes out and then drip lines all the way down the beds that just trickle out water. And that really helped. Mm-hmm. That kept the things going that needed less.
But I imagine these are the kinds of things that the experienced farmers talk to you about, tell you that you're going to need this. Mm-hmm. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, Sherry, I would assume that your organization helps facilitate the purchase of these or at least gets information, tells your new farmers how to get this done and, you know, how to bankroll it.
Yes, we the farmers that come to the class and talk about what they do certainly stress the importance of thinking ahead in terms of irrigation. And in terms of planning for that financial, that, you know, money output, that that comes in a couple different ways. Obviously, the instruction talks about how to plan for that in your budget. But then, in addition, we are working on launching something that mimics an IDA or an individual development account where farmers save money and then we fundraise to find match funds for that money. Mm-hmm. And the types of purchases that they would be making after saving money for a period of time would be for things like irrigation systems or tractors. And and so it's one of the ways in which we're looking to support farmers that have already launched but need a little incentive to save money and plan for the future.
I mentioned that we might take a phone call. Mike, you're still with us on the line, right?
Correct.
All right, I'll get to you in a second, but I want to go to Rick on, let's see if I can. There we go. Rick on line two, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Morning, guys. I know your guests are more directed at the business end of farming, and I can certainly appreciate that. I'm trying to raise my own stuff, and I'm hoping to have enough to be able to share with my neighbors, but I went to a class, I was on organic farming, and so the question is, they said to spread out gypsum and lime as food for the plants, but isn't that like fertilizer? I mean, does that still stay within organic guidelines?
Yes.
in a word?
Yeah, you can get, as long as you're careful of your source, but yeah, I don't know. It kind of depends on your soil. I mean, in my opinion, I don't think just spreading gypsum and lime on any soil is a good idea. I think probably you'd want to get it tested first to see if you really need that. Mm-hmm.
They're both types of calcium,
right?
So one is used for different kinds. I mean, each is used for a different kind of soil. So it seems to me, like you said, you would need to do a soil test and decide: do I need the dolomitic calcium, or do I need gypsum?
Right. Yeah. I mean, something that we do, we have a field of tomatoes that had a lot of blossom end rot, which is it's this indicator that your soil is lacking calcium. So we did end up adding gypsum to that area. But otherwise, I mean, yeah, it kind of just depends on what your soil needs.
Chris, did you want to? Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, thank you. So test the soil before we start adding stuff to it. So one other thing they suggested, and it, because plants do need food, they're suggesting that we spray, get this, cola, like RC or Coca-Cola on the and that's supposed to help them get more of what they need. And like, I wouldn't put that in my body. Why would I put it on my body?
That sounds gross. Wow.
Rick, where are you getting your advice? That's what I want to know.
Hey guys, that's why I thought I'd better ask. All right.
Chris, did you want to make a comment?
You know, I don't know as much about the organic chemicals as Allison would. Our farm, we try to keep everything off our food. So there are guidelines for
what do you mean by that? Try to keep everything
just
up.
Like my grandmother. We our policy is that we don't spray or put anything on the food that is not from the animals or the air already. Just like my great grandmother did. I've got the four kids, and our big idea is we want them to be able to walk in the field and eat whatever they want off of the plants in the field, and not ripping on organic methods or anything, but there are chemicals that are organic that are poisonous.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier in the show.
We don't use the really strong
chemical.
Yeah, yeah, we got toadstools, hemlock, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Rick, you've opened up an interesting line of conversation. I'm going to pursue it. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Awesome show.
I appreciate that. Bye-bye. And he does bring up a really good point, and Mike, you can jump in if you want, but are there different types of organics? It seems to me that you can use whatever you think, you know, whatever. What are your personal beliefs about that? And where do you train and where do you learn and what do they teach you?
For our farm, I mean, we really focus on soil health. So we really make sure that the soil is as healthy as possible, and that soil creates the healthiest plants possible. So if you create a really good soil structure, like we use a really good compost, and we do... you know, we'll do some trace minerals that that really will bulk up the plants and make them, you know, really nutrient rich. And we try to create as many micronutrients as possible in our food. And that's something that, you know, that we really believe in doing for our farms.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I just, as a kind of follow up to Allison's work comments, just to be clear, organic is a very specific set of guidelines. To be certified organic, there are very specific do's and don'ts. And someone like Alice Radical Root, as a certified organic operation, actually has to maintain very detailed records and submit those as a plan each year, and then has an actual inspection. So there are lots of things out there that people say. Cola, as an example, is not something that I think is in the National Organic Standards recommendation. So there are specific things, and the focus, as Allison says, is to really bolster the whole ecosystem. So most additions in the system focus on building the soil system and then having the soil feed the plants. Then the soil microbial systems feed the plants, not feeding the plants directly with chemical inputs.
Well, that is the whole soil food web philosophy, is that you feed the organisms that feed your plants, and we talk about that on the show. And I didn't realize that, Allison, you were certified organic.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, yours is not.
Correct.
But Mike, the point is that more and more there are farmers out there who use organic methods even though they don't get certified.
Correct.
And I think some of them do it because they feel like to get the certification, you got to jump through hoops of fire. And they feel like, no, I'll grow healthy stuff. I'm not going to say it's certified organic. I'm just going to say we use organic techniques. And aren't more and more farmers doing that?
I think there are as a percentage of the new farmers and farmers, yes, there are probably more farmers doing that. In terms of total numbers, there's absolutely no question that certified organic is also growing very rapidly. So, you know, that it's a reflection of the growth in both sectors. The critical piece... I just lost my train of thought. Go ahead.
Well, I can say a critical piece.
Okay.
One part about choosing to be certified organic or not is often motivated through your marketing.
Right.
So
right.
If you're going to be selling directly face-to-face at a farmer's market, many new farmers opt not to certify because they develop a more of a personal relationship with their customers, and the trust is developed that way. If you're selling through to grocery stores or to restaurants, and even sometimes with a CSA where there's a connection to the grower, but maybe not as face-to-face as it is at a farmer's market, then oftentimes growers will opt to go through the certification process to get that validation that their customers need to develop the trust through the certification.
And what I would ask Chris, Parshall, whether you find that not being certified organic has hurt your business in any way.
I don't feel it has. We, like Sherry just said, we talk to our customers one-on-one, and they know exactly how we grow. We are following organic methods wherever we can. We just don't use the chemicals. And as far as our CSA, all of those customers are told right up front how we grow, and they know how we grow. And I think it's exactly what you said. The personal contact is what makes it acceptable so that people know. But definitely selling to bigger places or where you don't have that personal contact, that's where the certified is a good advantage.
By the way, we got a tweet from David Zaber up in Wisconsin, and he's a he knows his stuff, and this is actually directed, I think, towards Rick, who called in earlier. He writes, gypsum can be contaminated. Be careful. So,
Yeah, know your source for sure.
Exactly. So thank you, David, for that. All right, we need to take another break here. Again, you're welcome to jump in, 773-763-9278. I'm going to kind of take us a little bit astream. We and the other thing is we haven't really talked about craft. Mm-hmm. Yet, I want to, and everybody in the studio is nodding. That's the Collaborative Regional Alliance for Farmer Training, and how that fits into all this equation. And we will do that with our guests, Chris Parshall of Trogs Hollow, Allison Parker of Radical Root Farm, Sherry Doyle, Angelic Organics Learning Center, and Mike Sands. We've got a lot of folks here from Liberty Prairie Foundation, all on the Mike Novak Show. Now, you probably didn't know this, but there are only 53 shopping days until Halloween.
Oh, man.
I did the math yesterday, and that's the only math I'm capable of doing. Don, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Yes,
good morning.
Good morning. I always hear you talk about the different fruit trees and everything.
Yeah.
Native to this area and to Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, and Michigan. Besides pawpaws, persimmons, and they have a very sweet plum tasting fruit on them, and I've got pawpaws, and they're delicious.
but you wanted to strike a blow for persimmons.
Yes, I did.
Do we have any persimmon growers in the room here?
Oh, I wish.
Yeah,
I didn't know you could grow persimmons here. That's good information.
See,
they make excellent cookies.
There we go, Don. Yes. You might have some folks who you've won over here.
Yeah, actually, they are native to Indiana. I know that for a fact.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I've got them in my backyard.
See, all I know about... Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No, and the nice thing about pawpaw and persimmons,
yeah,
very easy to take care of because they're used to this type of weather, rain patterns and everything. They grow very hardly.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you. That is a great tip. I appreciate it, Don, and I'm glad you were listening to the show.
Thanks, Don. It's a good show. I listen every Sunday.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. I hope you continue to do that. Thank you. Have a great Sunday.
Same to you.
And, you know, the only thing I know about persimmons is Daffy Duck. where Daffy Duck would say, "Thanks for the sour persimmons, Buster."
Yeah, eating them fresh, I think, is a different thing. Yeah.
If persimmons are at their absolute best, if you wait till after the first frost.
Yep. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Delicious.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
Fresh.
I did ask that question earlier. I want to tell you about an article that a friend sent me, and it's apparently just out in Harper's Magazine. And it's called Broken Heartland, The Looming Collapse of Agriculture on the Great Plains. And it's just a magnificent article by Will S. Hilton, H-Y-L-T-O-N. Very interesting, and he goes out to talk to a lot of folks out in the Great Plains who are farming, have been farming. And one of the things he writes as he visits his farmer in Kansas, this guy's growing clover is one of his crops. And the farmer's name is Teske, and he says along the way, Teske explained why in a state filled with silos and cleaners, we had to drive so far to deliver his clover. The seed, it turned out, was organic, as were all of Teske's crops. Though he was quick to clarify that this was not just for moral reasons. On the contrary, organic farming seemed to him the only sensible option left. Decades of innovation had turned conventional farming into such an expensive and technical proposition that it was hopeless for anyone but agribusiness conglomerates to attempt it. This, he said, was the real cause of depopulation. Modern technology made it possible and more or less obligatory for a single owner to work 50 times as much land. So neighbors got to buying out neighbors and then were bought out themselves. The only way forward, Teske figured, was to reject all these modern innovations, at which point you were basically organic. That kind of blew me away. And and it's not the first time I've heard that as well. We just have a couple of minutes, but I was wondering, Mike, maybe you wanted to address that just a little bit about how we've backed ourselves into a kind of a technological corner in terms of growing food, haven't we?
I think there's absolutely no question that we're backed ourselves into our corner. And it really comes out of not only the agribusiness technology, but our farm policy that, in essence, creates a situation where farmers have to continue to grow the commodity crops of corn, beans, wheat, and can't experiment with more diverse rotations. Now, having said that, there are there are some unbelievably exciting stories with people like Dick Thompson in Boone, Iowa, who's probably 70 years old now, 75 years old, and has been at mixed corn and bean, hogs, beef cattle, cover crops, very, very successful farmer, out yields any of his neighbors, and he's an organic farmer. Gabe Brown in Bismarck, North Dakota, farms almost 1,000 acres with his son, is organic, does incredible combinations of cocktail mixes of cover crops that he has built his soil organic matter from less than 1% to over 10%, can absorb a 5-inch rainfall with having no runoff. These guys are all incredible examples of people who are doing amazing things with organic farming, not, again, because of any specific moral reasons, but because it's good business and good stewardship.
And I mentioned before, and I'm going to, Sherry, put you on the spot for about a minute, talk about CRAFT, the Collaborative Regional Alliance for Farmer Training.
CRAFT is a network of farmers, new, experienced, young, old, and our region covers both sides of the Illinois-Wisconsin state line, sort of going up into near Madison and down near Ottawa. And we have about 100-plus farmers in the network. And then we also have Friends of CRAFT. So you can join CRAFT even if you don't have land and farm because you're interested in farming. And the main purpose of CRAFT is to share information. And so we organize 12 field days on member farms throughout the season. And we have a steering committee of new farmers and old farmers. Chris here is on the steering committee. Mm-hmm. And so the staff at the Learning Center work with the steering committee to decide on those topics. And we have, you know, anywhere from 10 to 40 people.
And, so, and the idea is to get the old farmers and the new farmers together, and they help each other out.
Yeah. Yes, with on very specific topics. So it's a farm tour, but it might be all about irrigation. Or,
okay, and I wanted to get that out. I've got a link to it. I have links to all of the information we talked about today. I want to thank you all for being on the show, Chris Parshall, Allison Parker, Sherry Doyle, Mike Sands. It's just been a fascinating conversation. What I'm going to do is I'm going to make a podcast of this and put this up.
Great.
So if folks want to hear our conversation, and I hope people will contact each of you. State Line Farm Beginnings, and we
have extended our deadline for that program to September 23rd.
Fabulous. You can get involved. That's it. We're done with the show today. At this point, I say go green, and you say go home. You ready? Go green or...
go home. Thank you, Mike.